and welcome back to another edition of YCT Matters. This is Carol Platt-Liebau, president of Yankee Institute, and today we are delighted to be joined by Portia Conant-Gilman, who is senior markets analyst at Yes Energy. And I feel incredibly fortunate that Portia was willing to join us to talk with us about energy and to actually get into with us a little bit about what a lot of these terms mean. And before we started to record the podcast, I was having a few moments of true confessions with Portia, and I was telling her, I understand electricity and energy policy, I hope, as it were, in the abstract, but sometimes when we talk about grids and ISOs and imports and everything else, you know, sometimes I think to myself, I really don't know that my technical grasp of all of these terms is as solid as it should be. And I thought, if that's true for me, perhaps it's true for a number of the people who listen to this podcast and take an interest in Connecticut policy. So we thought we will find someone who is highly expert on these issues, ask them to come on and teach us all. And we were fortunate enough to persuade Portia to do that. So Portia, welcome. We are delighted to have you with us.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. So, you know, as they famously say in The Sound of Music, let's start at the very beginning. We all talk about the electricity grid. And can you help us understand what, you know, when we talk about the grid and, you know, what the, how the grid operates, what exactly is the grid?
That's a great question. I sometimes wonder myself when we hear people who are going off grid and I'm like, what does that mean? But the grid, at least in this context, it really simply, it just refers to the entire massive network of electrical generation, transmission, and distribution. So really you can think of it as the grid across, you know, the entire continent. You can also think of it as the subsections within it, but it's encompassing that whole chain of production of electricity from generation to transmission to distribution. And it's really, it's the biggest machine in the whole world.
Interesting. So help us also, that sort of raised another question in my mind, since you were sort of idiot walking me through all these terms. What is the difference? Obviously, there is a difference between transmission and distribution, but you had said transmission and then something else and distribution.
Yep. Yep. So generation. So it starts at the point of actually generating electricity from the generators, right? And so the way I like to kind of think about it easily is, you know, if you go and drive on the highway and you see those big lines, those big high voltage lines that are super, super tall, you almost don't even notice them anymore.
Right.
Big massive lines. Those are the transmission lines. Okay. And that's very different from, you know, if you step outside your door and you look up and you see the smaller lines that connect your house to the grid. Those are the distribution lines.
Okay.
So those are, that's very important distinction, especially what we're going to be talking about. But so the generation, right, it generates.
Right.
And it gets stepped up to the transmission system. And the purpose of the transmission system is to transport that generation over long distances to the point where it's going to be consumed by you, the retail consumer.
Got it. So that is very interesting because obviously everyone understands generation is where the electricity is made. But then what I hadn't understood was that distinction between transmission and distribution. So that is very helpful. So that is basically how the grid operates. And so then you have what? You have ISOs, you have independent systems operators. And what exactly, who are these independent system operators? How does one become an independent systems operators? And what is their role in this entire situation?
Oh, great question. Well, it spans really, you know, many, many decades of transformation that led to the birth of the ISOs and the RTOs, but it actually links really well to what we were just discussing, that distinction between transmission and distribution. And the reason that distinction is so important is because when we're talking about these ISOs, RTOs, so independent system operators, regional transmission operators, they're basically the same thing. We kind of have a joke about this, like what's the difference? And no one's really sure. But ISOs, RTOs, basically the same thing. But what they do is they're responsible for the operation of the grid, specifically at the transmission level.
Okay.
And they actually aren't responsible for the operation at the distribution level, which is may seem like a minor detail, but it has a huge impact on policy. It has a huge impact on jurisdiction. And so the reason for that is that these transmission lines, again, remember, they transport the electricity over long distances. And oftentimes those transmission lines cross state lines. Well, as soon as they cross state lines, they become federal jurisdiction.
Right.
So the grid is under actually federal jurisdiction under FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, along with the gas system. And so what the ISOs are kind of in this interesting spot in between kind of the industry and the FERC, where they're charged with managing and operating and administering the grid at the transmission level. And so in a lot of ISOs, that does cross state lines, not in all ISOs. And so they actually don't have any jurisdiction at the distribution level where your utility operates, because that's the local domain within the state.
Sure. So like Eversource is a distributor.
Eversource is like a utility. We call them, the general term we like to use is load serving entities, which is kind of this general umbrella, weird sounding term, but it basically just refers to any entity that actually sends electricity to your house, that is responsible for serving you, the end use customer, which is not the ISO. So actually the load serving entities like Eversource, they come to the ISO to engage in the markets to procure the electricity that they then turn around and sell to you, the customer.
Got it. That is, this is all extremely interesting. Okay.
Very interesting.
So now when we talk about import, how exactly does import work?
Now, specify for me which kind of imports you're referring to. You're talking about electrical
import? Yes, electrical import. And Okay. And why, in theory, could we not just import, for example, as much electricity as we wanted to?
Okay, I see. Yes. So these ISOs, these RTOs, they're responsible, like I said, for different regions of the grid in North America. Right. So there's the New England ISO, which is responsible for the six New England states, right. New York has their own, right? And then there's PJM, SPP, MISO, I could go on and on. There's several of them throughout the country. And so they each manage the grid in their locale. And so what that does is it creates interfaces between them where they can then trade electricity with the neighboring regions. And so we refer to them as imports, exports, which is a little bit confusing because it's internal to the US grid. But really, it means, you know, importing from
across regions.
Across regions. Yeah, exactly. So like in New England, for example, they're importing from New York, New Brunswick, and Quebec.
Interesting.
And exporting sometimes, but they're a net importer.
So it isn't just the United States, it's also Canada.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so how exactly are these trades effectuated? Are they then, do we pay? Is it done in dollars or is it done? How does that actually happen? Are these negotiated? What goes on?
Yeah. It's pretty similar to how electricity is traded within these markets in general. So if you think about it from a high level, it's a similar concept. Mm-hmm. So the ISOs, in addition to operating the transmission system, they also administer the markets that are on top of the trades of electricity that go on. And so that's a whole other thing that we could talk about for a really long time, dispatch of electricity. But the imports and exports work pretty much the same way, where the ISO is responsible for executing the trades that are taking place. So generators on either side of the import-export can choose to submit trades. They can choose to sell across those interfaces if they wish, and then they get scheduled by the ISOs, and the ISOs are responsible for making sure that those flows can actually happen. They can actually be executed.
Can people invest in this? I know that sounds like a stupid question, but while I'm asking, might as well just get it out there.
Invest in?
In other words, you know, there are markets in here and you're a market analyst. Is there any sort of investment opportunities in these, or is this just something that is executed between these two entities quietly as just sort of something that is, you know, when you talk about markets, you talk about trades, you talk about things like that, it's the same sort of language and the same sort of discussion that accompanies a lot of investment vehicles.
Yes.
Is there any sort of investment opportunity here for people, or is this just something that is done between these entities that is done completely off books, completely off? I mean, there's no kind of payment, no sort of currency exchanges hands. It's just in terms of electricity, correct?
No, not correct. Yes.
Okay, so, right. Yeah. So there is investment and there is money to be made in this, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So what the description you just gave is kind of the answer is yes to all the above. So it partially depends on which region you're in and which market you're in. But from a general level in the ISO markets, so the ISOs, again, are they're responsible actually for administering those markets. So this isn't fully technically correct, but the way I kind of like to think about it, to wrap my brain around it, is they kind of serve the function of like a marketplace, right? So a meeting place for buyers and sellers. And then they operate the software that actually both dispatches the generation to meet the demand, right, and dispatches the markets. So they actually execute the buyers that have the bids to buy and the sellers that have the offers to sell. They clear those at, right, through the market clearing engine and dispatch the electricity. And so even though the ISOs are that central meeting place, there are still trades that happen outside of that.
Okay.
Between companies, they can happen. They're called bilateral trades. But the ISOs are the ones that are actually administering the markets themselves. And so they serve a nonprofit function. They're there to just clear the markets and make sure that the electricity is actually running, that the lights are staying on 24/7. But certainly, and other parts of the country are not like that. So not every part of the country actually has an ISO RTO. And that gets into the whole history of what you asked before about how we got here. Those markets are still what's called vertically integrated, which means that the local utilities, municipalities actually own the entire chain of supply from generation to distribution. But it's not like that in the ISO markets. In the ISO markets, it's chopped up so that the generation and the transmission and the distribution are all separate. And so there certainly can be, there's lots of money changing hands. There's investment happening at the local level. There's investment happening at, within those particular generators, those load serving entities. And where it gets really interesting, and actually where my company gets really involved as well, is at the ISO market level. You can have an entire sector of traders who are trading on those markets, and virtual traders as well, who are using the data that is being generated from these markets to make money.
Interesting. So help me understand then. So in California, for example, I don't think out west they don't have ISOs, correct? Are they still vertically integrated?
ISO is, I'm not sure which one it is, if it's an ISO or an RTO, but it is an ISO.
Okay.
And the Northwest is not, the Southwest is not, although there are big changes coming where those regions are trying to work through development of some day ahead and real time markets, similar to what you see in other parts of the country.
So in California, I remember when I lived there, and now especially, they have these rolling blackouts, they have brownouts, they have all of that. Why exactly? I mean, obviously it's because, demand outstrips supply of electricity, but obviously there's, in a sense, a market failure, correct? And, you have too many people and too little electricity. So you have transmission that isn't happening.
Sure. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why a blackout might happen.
Right.
That is one of the main purposes of the ISO, is to make sure that doesn't happen. Right. Certainly, it shows a breakdown of that very complex machine that keeps the lights on, that keeps them up and running. And so that could be due to, like you're saying, demand is exceeding supply, which is the most common one.
Right.
Shortfalls. Weather is a huge driver, especially in New England, right?
Right.
These reliability issues. It could be due to unexpected outages, things breaking on the grid.
Sure.
All this stuff that happens behind the scenes that you, the consumer, don't ever see. So behind the scenes, there's all these protocols that are happening. And anytime something's going awry, and there's all these procedures in place that the ISO is administering to make sure that there's these contingencies that are happening to prevent the lights from actually going out, because we don't actually want that to happen unless it's absolutely necessary.
Right. So let's talk now a little bit about some of the complications in terms of ensuring, energy infrastructure, because we've walked through these technical aspects a little bit. And I mean, obviously, including the fact that things break and all of that, which, I think we all understand at sort of a visceral level. But in terms of if the demand on, electrical demand went up radically in a short period of time, and, staying away from policy pluses, minuses, whatever, you know, just in terms of the technical aspects. So, for example, as you know, there's been a lot of discussion about electric vehicle mandates, and that would, you know, all of a sudden require a lot more energy infrastructure. How do these issues sort of pertain to the complications that would ensue if all of a sudden energy demand skyrocketed? I guess that's what we're sort of trying to understand here. You know, these things clearly have big chain effects. And so when people are saying we don't have the infrastructure, I guess they're saying we don't have the transmission infrastructure or the generation infrastructure or the distribution or all three. Like, what exactly do you think that means?
Yes. So you think about, for example, a particular policy like the potential growth in EVs, just the general electrification that everyone's talking about, right? That's coming. And you know, may seem really simple just to bring it back to this level, but remember that would mean that increases, like you're saying, the demand on the electrical grid quite significantly. And this is a significant thing that would happen. It's already a challenge that the ISOs face. Like you mentioned, California, there's been a few major storms the past couple of years down in Texas, is a region I'm more familiar with. And there's already that challenge that the ISO is trying to face, which is their primary job is to keep the lights on, right? Their primary job is reliability. And so they're constantly balancing supply and demand. They're constantly trying to figure out, okay, you know, what does the resource mix look like? How can we schedule it? How can we make sure the markets are working effectively to keep the lights on at competitive prices? Okay. And so when you introduce something like this massive potential increase in EVs in demand, that's going to increase, you know, one of those variables and then have a chain reaction on all the rest of them, like you're saying. So it's going to increase the demand on the grid, right? So all right there. So for example, Texas, right? Texas is actually a leader in wind and solar generation. They have a massive amount of both wind and solar. And right now they're still experiencing like a capacity crunch, a generation capacity crunch, even though they've had such a massive influx of new generation. And it's partly because they've had such increasing demand from population, from data centers, from crypto mining. And so even though the generation's been increasing, you know, it depends how quickly the demand increases to be able to maintain that balance of supply and demand. So immediately, as soon as we start talking about an increase in demand, we have to ask the question of, okay, how much generation is needed to meet that increase in demand, right? And so what does that generation look like, right? And then this ties in with the energy transition. You know, what does that resource mix look like? How much of it is renewables? How much of it is, you know, the traditional dispatchable fuel resources? To what extent of it is batteries, balancing resources? What does that mix look like to meet not only the existing demand, but the projected increase, right, into the future? And you keep pulling the thread on that and you ask, okay, new generation has to come into the grid. Well, actually, there is a ton of new generation sitting around the country waiting to be built in what are called interconnection queues. I think the estimate is there's actually about as much generation waiting to be built as already exists on the whole grid. And so one area that the industry is really focused on that maybe the general public is not as aware of, it are called interconnection queues. And so there are these interconnection queues that exist between the new generation that needs to be built and the transmission system. So if you want to build generation to meet demand, you know, you can't just plop up the generation. You have to hook it into the grid that we've been talking about, right? And
yeah.
So that is where the generation starts to meet the point of transmission. It meets the ISO markets. And so that is a whole process that they have to go through, the rigorous studies to get interconnected to the transmission system. And so right now, FERC and many of the ISOs are actually trying to reform their interconnection queues to make them faster and more efficient. So that's one huge factor, that's one huge bottleneck where, you have this increase in demand. And even if you have the increase in supply to meet it, doesn't necessarily mean that it's just going to pop up tomorrow. Right?
Sure.
So these things take time. And then that leads to the next question, like you're saying, okay, now let's say that these generators can interconnect to the transmission system. How much transmission do we need, right? To transport all this electricity from where it's generated to where it's needed the most. And right. this is huge. This really gets to the heart of the energy markets, of the electrical grid, is the transmission system. This is what makes it so interesting, because these markets are very locational. They're very geographical. It really depends on where the generation is located. So for example, again, I'll just use Texas as an example. They have a lot of wind in a part of Texas where no one lives, right? So they have to get the wind from the northwest part of Texas down to the south to where the cities are, right? Well, you need transmission to do that. And so the question has been on the table for many years now, and is going to keep increasing, of, do we need to build more? How much do we need, right, to actually operate the grid reliably, to actually provide the supply that's needed to meet the demand, especially in light of, you know, the increasing demand we see coming down the horizon?
It is, you know, it is amazing how much of this is so incredibly technical. And the insight that I had never really realized is you can have, like, in a sense, it's like the cord and the outlet, but you have that whole piece that they have to work out about how to get the cord into the outlet, as it were.
Absolutely. Yes. And this is why you'll hear a lot of talk now too about distributed energy resources as well. So this is another aspect of industry that is evolving, and people trying to figure out other solutions to this, where, you know, can we get smaller generators that actually connect to the distribution system at the local level, instead of the transmission system? And how does that work? How does that play into the whole picture? You know, how efficient are they? How well do they produce electricity? How cost effective are they? But those distributed energy resources are becoming an increasingly bigger piece of the puzzle, especially as we're facing, you know, you can kind of see, if you take a step back, that the grid is in a sense, it's kind of being crunched from multiple sides. So this is a really, really interesting time to be kind of paying attention to this industry, because both, you know, supply and the demand side are changing very drastically right now.
They really are. So before we wind up, Portia, I guess my last question would be, what is it that I should ask if I were intelligent enough to ask it? Is there some other piece of this that I am missing that people across Connecticut would want to know about? I mean, we've talked now about this distribution piece, you know, that I had hitherto been unaware of. But, you know, we have the sort of the generation piece, the transmission piece, the distribution piece, and now, you know, this challenge of sort of hooking the pieces together. I mean, is there some other thing that people should be watching for coming down the pike as we look to address the growing demand and the challenges that come with the renewed emphasis on these new forms of technology in the electrical industry?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime that you can kind of just think about that whole chain of production and just put a pin in your mind, you know, anytime you see a news headline or you hear someone talk about it and think, you know, what are the implications that this could have that I may not be seeing? What is there more to consider here? Because there's always so much more to consider where the grid is involved. And, you know, as we're going through these transitions and all these changes, it's really important to consider all these aspects, because if you don't, things can break, right?
Sure.
So you know, to kind of bring it back down to earth, one additional aspect that we maybe don't have time to fully go into, but that is probably, you know, close to home right here in New England. I'm located in New York, and now we're talking about Connecticut. I used to live and work in Massachusetts, but is the gas pipeline infrastructure. So that's also, you know, a pretty big factor. And it's especially unique in New England, as you probably know, Carol, because of where we're located in the country. So in the wintertime right now, when it gets really cold, you add in an additional variable for the New England ISO and New York, which is that in the wintertime, the ISO and the generators compete with you, the consumer, for natural gas.
Right.
So the natural gas can either go to the generators, or it can go to the houses to heat your home when it gets really cold. Well, guess what? When it gets really cold, you know, the weather comes in and the grid is constrained, that natural gas is going to go to you first, the consumer, to heat your home, which means that it's not necessarily going to the generator. And so that creates an additional level of complexity that the ISO has to grapple with, that generators have to grapple with, that not every other area of the country grapples with, because we have lots of natural gas in most of the areas of the country, but because New England's at the end of those gas pipelines, they can't necessarily have the same access to that gas that other areas of the country do.
And then, sorry, last doofus question, that would make our electricity more expensive, correct?
Correct. Yes, it is more expensive compared to the rest of the country on average.
Well, there you go. I think I'd better quit while I'm ahead, Portia. but it is, you know, very, very interesting. And it is amazing all the technical issues that have to be sort of digested to understand fully. I mean, you know, obviously policy can be understood, you know, in a sort of theoretical way, but it really is very useful to be able to grasp in a slightly more granular way what exactly is happening when we talk about these terms, and to understand, you know, and have it explained by someone who is much more of an expert what all these terms mean, and to help us. And so for that, we are all extremely appreciative.
Thank you, Carol. I appreciate being here.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll do it again soon. This is Portia Gilman, Markets Analyst at Yes Energy, and we are very grateful for your time. And as to all of you, our listeners, we are appreciative for you joining us to listen and learn along with us. This is Carol Platt-Liebau, and we hope you'll join us for another edition of YCT Matters. I'll show you.